Blog Talk Radio.
Carol Dean, author of The Art of Film Funding and faculty member of the New York Film Academy, will soon begin a new session of her uniquely creative intentional filmmaking class. Intentional filmmakers are taught current financing and marketing and distribution techniques. We each focus on creating and achieving our goals by using our intentions and our skills. There are three classes: the Mastermind class taught with Tom Malloy for features, Carol's Trailblazers class for documentary films in early stages, and her Pathfinders class for documentary films in later stages of production. The class size is limited, and there is a discount for early enrollment. Call Carol at 805-984-0098 for more information, and visit FromTheHeartProductions.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Voice of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Erica Pan, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest today is Adam Sapnick, creator of Distribber and currently principal evangelist at Indiegogo. Adam is a crowdfunding expert, and he's here to teach us how to create successful campaigns on Indiegogo, the world's largest funding platform. And Carol, you've been a partner with Indiegogo for over 2 years now, right?
Exactly. And we've had so much fun and learned an immense amount creating campaigns with Indiegogo. And their support has been complete, and we can't ask for any more. And so we're really happy to have you with us today, Adam. We have a lot of questions for you.
Oh, good. I would expect nothing less. And let me just say, it's really always great to speak with you, and we're really, really privileged to have you and From the Heart as a one of our oldest partners, one of our first partners. It never ceases to amaze me what you're able to accomplish with your filmmakers, and you're really an important part of our community. So God bless you, Carol.
Oh, thank you, Adam. I appreciate that, because I love what I do, and I really love working with Indiegogo. So let's get started with what you consider some of the best practices that are absolutely necessary for crowdfunding.
Great question. So there's a lot, but there's certain things that if I only have a few moments with someone, you know, that I'm talking to, that I really try and make sure they understand, because there are certain misconceptions about crowdfunding that will really keep you from succeeding if you can't get your head right about them. The misconception, the biggest one, is that crowdfunding is something that sort of magically, passively happens by putting your campaign up on a site like Indiegogo, where you go and you make your page and you leave it there and wake up in the morning and the quote-unquote community has found you, decided that you're great, and given you a whole lot of money. And while that process does happen in crowdfunding, it always happens at the end of your campaign, in the middle to the end. So the thing that I always say is traction comes from action. And if you can remember nothing else, understand that what you reap what you sow. So in terms of that, understanding that, some of the best practices at the outset have to do with preparation and understanding that you need to line up your people to support you in advance of launching your campaign, and knowing who is going to give you support day one before you press the button to set your campaign live. So we often talk about something that I call a host committee, which is having, you know, the 20 most ardent supporters of your film who would give you money regardless. You have a personal contact with them, an actual conversation where you line up the amount that they're prepared to contribute and their name, and you educate them that having their participation on the first day will make an enormous difference for several reasons. And you make sure that you don't publicize your campaign until you've had all of those host committee's contributions put into your campaign on day one, or what I sometimes call day minus one. And so we advocate a, something called a soft launch, hard launch strategy, which means you make your campaign live on Indiegogo on, say, a Monday, but all of the prep work that you've been doing up until then involves telling blogs, telling newspapers, telling relevant influencers that the campaign is coming and going live on, say, Tuesday. That way, when all of the strangers out in the world arrive, they see momentum. And something that we know about campaigns is that a stranger, meaning someone who doesn't already know you, even if they love your project, they will not give you money into your $0 campaign until your campaign has reached 20 to 30% of its goal. So if you are saying, I need, whatever, $100,000 by September 1st, someone who comes to your campaign and doesn't know you and your project already but likes it probably won't part with their $20, $30, $40, $50 until they see somewhere around $20,000 in that $100,000 campaign. Might be 15, might be 25, but they need traction or else they don't believe, they don't trust that you're actually going to do what you say. They don't trust that you're actually a good bet. So if you understand that, you want to be responsible for having 20 to 30% of your goal amount in your campaign before anyone out there in the world even knows that it's live. That'll also help you pick your goal, but we can talk about that a little later.
Really important, the host, having your host group together. And it's a soft launch first, and then the hard launch once everybody is on board with bloggers and newspapers and all the people you need to support you, right?
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, you know, filmmakers are incredible to me. You know, I've worked with them back before Indiegogo. I was in distribution, and I'm on the board of the International Documentary Association. And I, if there's anything, anyone that I admire, it's a filmmaker because of their incredible ability to marshal forces and effort over an incredible amount of time to make their vision happen. You know, most, as you know, as we all know, you know, most filmmakers have their idea, you know, in January of 2002, and their film is done in, you know, 2009 or something. It's just crazy. So I incredibly admire them, but they're so multi-talented and multi-skilled, but a lot of filmmakers are unaware of something very minute in terms of promotion, which is that you can ask journalists, bloggers, and obviously just lay people to do what's called embargoing. And an embargo is a really valuable and powerful, simple tactic in PR, where you spend all your work, maybe for weeks or even months prior to your launch, going out to newspapers or blogs or magazines or whatever your niche publication online or offline is, and you try and drum up support for this project that you're doing. And some people will say no, and some people will say yes. But if you take the extra step of saying, great, thank you for writing this story or doing this interview with me, I would love it if you could embargo its release until this date. And most people will understand and work with you to accommodate your schedule. And if you, the reason that's so powerful is that you can then start to create an amplified announcement by lumping together lots of blog posts on your project to launch on that same Tuesday. And you can even, not only will it, they all happen on the same Tuesday and create an echo chamber of awareness, but you know that you've already got your host committee giving your money on the Monday, so it's strategically placed to be sending all those referrals to your campaign when they're most likely to result in contributions. So that's something that really helps, just that embargo idea.
It's brilliant. That's another new word for me. Thank you.
It's an old PR term.
This idea of the 25%, I spoke to someone who was in the music business, Adam, and he was thinking of running a campaign, and I mentioned this to him. He said, oh, we've been doing that for years with the CD market. He said, we know what the costs will be, and we go out and we buy the first X thousand ourselves so that, we drive the sales up, and everyone says, oh, look, they've got a good CD.
Isn't that funny? I've never heard that. That's funny, but I totally believe it because it's not. This is something that is. It's one of the most core fundamental truths that we've observed of all. It's the most powerful thing. If you don't do it, it doesn't work. If you do it, it tends to work.
Yes, and I've always told people that up to now I've said that you have to get some traction, and it might take you 7 emails to get people off of the fence. But by doing this up front, they are ready to jump off the fence and join you much faster, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. There's a lot of one of the fun things about crowdfunding for me, honestly, is how many things in, you know, we've been doing this the longest forever. We have, you know, hundreds of thousands of campaigns that we've observed and we have data on. And so we get to see a lot of just data fact that contradicts some sort of your conventional wisdom, what you would expect. So there's a lot of counterintuitive truths about the crowdfunding process that are fun to observe. So one of them, to your point, is that updates actually correlate very closely with the amount of money raised. And at first, that doesn't seem counterintuitive. That seems like, yeah, the more, like, you know, the more you badger someone, the more they'll give you money. But what's so fascinating is that updates on Indiegogo aren't outreach emails. Those are updates to people who have already contributed. So what's fascinating is by the more you reinforce the fact that somebody's already contributed to something that is in fact a good idea, that was a good idea that you gave me $20, yes, this is really happening, that you gave me $20, yes, you're part of something that's a winner and you gave me $20 and you're as much a part of this as I am, suddenly what happens is somewhere around, like, it's funny, you said 7, and it's somewhere after 5 to 6, maybe it's 10 to 11 updates. The curve, when you graph people's fundraises over, you know, thousands of campaigns, the curve hockey sticks. It goes straight up, meaning people who do 31 to 50 updates, 31 to 40, excuse me, updates, earn 400% of what someone who does 5 or 6 updates make as a stat. So
incredible.
Incredible. So what we see happening is that a lot of people will end up becoming sort of resold or more sold on your campaign. And that might mean that they contribute twice. And fascinating that we have over about 2/3 of campaigns that hit their goal on Indiegogo have people who contribute to your campaign more than once. And that's usually a function of updates. You might release a new perk and they might say, wow, this thing is really happening and I also want that perk. So yes, I gave $20 just to be, you know, get the download of the film, but I would actually like to visit the set and meet this guy who I've been getting updates from. So they might give you $150 on week 4. But as important is that by doing a lot of updates, we see people who initially contribute and then go silent start sharing somewhere in the middle of your campaign, which indicates they couldn't say no, maybe. I actually sometimes call it the crazy sibling phenomenon, meaning people in the crazy sibling phenomenon, you are the crazy sibling, not your sibling. So it's where you announce you have a new project and your sibling says, oh my gosh, another crazy project from my sister Carol. When is she just going to go to law school and do something sensible? You know, my crazy sibling. But here's $20. I gave you the money. Please don't make me, you know, read anything else. Don't make me do anything for this movie idea. It's just crazy. But then they get the updates, and the updates are full of success stories. They're full of, you know, we signed a new actor. We have a new location. You know, we have anything that indicates that you're really doing this. You're not crazy. And so somewhere in the middle, your siblings, and that doesn't literally mean your brother or your sister. It can mean your close, you know, circle of contacts, acquaintances, business contacts, whatever. Whereas they at first gave you $20 to get off their back, somewhere in the middle, they're like, oh, wait, I really do like this. This really is exciting. And wait a minute, Carol's my sister. And they go on to Facebook and they say, my brilliant sister Carol is doing an incredible film. Support her. So the updates don't just result in additional contributions, but they actually result in additional and more powerful sharing in the middle of a campaign, which is why people who update 30 times or more make four times as much money as people who update five.
That's brilliant. And that goes back to what they call social currency, because people like to talk about personal experiences and they like to tell people something good that's happening. So if they are truly connected to your film and they are chatting about it, person to person is still your very best marketing, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. In fact, we know you can even sort of track that downward in that on Indiegogo, we know that the most effective tools for conversion, you know, converting someone to click through into your campaign page and click through that into becoming a contributor, are in order. Number one is email. And that's not necessarily a surprise, I guess, but it corroborates what you're saying. You know, you talk to someone, then the next closest thing to that is emailing them. Then right after that, we see Facebook, and then after that, Twitter. So it does track very closely to which is the closest thing to talking to someone. You know, it's true.
It is. And the research shows that 40% of what people talk about is their personal experience. And Harvard says they did a study, and they say that it's rewarding to people to talk about something personal. They want to share things. So when you get your film to that level where people want to share it, that's what you can use to go viral, right?
That's very interesting. Yeah. One of the things that we've always said, mostly just through anecdotal observation, but it's true, you know, is that people don't fund projects. People fund people. And, of course, that's a generalization in that in certain categories on Indiegogo, like hardware or something, sometimes people do just fund projects, you know, like, oh, that's a cool robot dragonfly. I want one. But across the vast majority of campaigns on Indiegogo where there's someone with an idea that needs, you know, the support of a community to make the idea happen, the idea is actually secondary to the human being who's got the vision. And so when we talk about making an effective campaign video, often I'll talk about making sure you're clear first and then making clear in the video what is your why, your W-H-Y, why, meaning why are you making this movie or why are you making this movie? And, you know, it's one thing to just say, or I guess the old trap was filmmakers specifically sometimes would just throw up a trailer and let that stand for their campaign video. And it's understandable because they feel like, well, gee, I'm a filmmaker. Obviously, I made a trailer. I spent all this time and work and energy and money and expertise making this incredible trailer. But often those campaigns would have a lower success rate than a less professional video that had the artist, him or herself, speaking about why he or she came up with this idea, how they're going to make the film happen and why they're going to do it that way and how excited and meaningful and impactful it'll be for them and how much they want the community to be a part of it and why. And suddenly the community really will respond because they're being included in the whole why of the project itself, as opposed to just giving money to someone who's doing something.
Right.
Yeah, and there's another thing about specifically for filmmakers there's a reason why trailers don't work. And this is really important because I think most filmmakers' first idea is I'll stick my trailer up. But psychologically, we all, as Americans, and even most Westerners or most people in the world, let's even say, have been conditioned to consider a trailer as an advertisement for a commoditized purchasing decision that we already have anchored a value to. By which I mean, when you and I watch a trailer, our inner brain is telling us, we have a yes or no decision to make. Yes, I want to buy or rent this movie. No, I won't. And then if we say, ooh, this looks cool, our brain says yes, and it's anchored already just because we all grew up with movies. it's anchored a yes decision to equal about the cost of seeing a movie, which at the most is about $15, right, for an IMAX.
Right.
Or maybe you could say at the most it's $30 for a high-definition Blu-ray, you know, DVD purchase. So the reason that's not good in crowdfunding is you want to try and unlock people from that anchor of value. You don't want them to be making a yes or no decision for $30 maximum. You want them to be bought into the entire possibility of the vision of the project, so that they might want to spend $500 to join you on the set, or you know, $150 to get one of the props that they relate to because of some reason, or you know, $250 to name the street that the character lives on after their hometown, you know, something like that. It's much more flexible, much more robust an opportunity to attach the value to someone's passion to be involved in your project if you do it that way. So long
it certainly
story short,
is.
Yeah, don't
I remember it. Studying about trailers, and the rule of thumb a couple of years ago was that if you had to see a trailer, if you saw a trailer in the movie theater or online, wherever, four times, you probably wouldn't go. But if you saw it up to seven or eight times, you would definitely get to the theater and see that film. So there, it's repetition, that and the studios know that. So that's why they put trailers everywhere, because they need for you to they've got to imprint it on you eight times to get you to the theater. And we don't have that with crowdfunding. It's a do or die, practically, when you get them on the page one time. So this is where perks and personality come into play, right?
No, absolutely. Yeah, if you have a lot of personality, you have an advantage, for sure.
And
perks, right.
Perks and personality. Well, all right, so you want to stay on the idea of the trailer for another a minute or two for me, and just tell me, what do you recommend to people who are creating their trailer?
Well, first, I would recommend that they not call it a trailer, because they might put up their trailer. But you know, their campaign video, like their pitch, call it pitch, because
pitch.
That's really what you need. You need you to pitch me. In fact, it goes back to kind of what you said, Carol, where the most impactful conversation that you can have that will get someone to participate is a person-to-person conversation. So I would treat your campaign video as a proxy for having me, or anyone, sitting in the room with you. So look at your camera, whether it's on your iPhone or your laptop or your, you know, your red camera, whatever you're shooting your campaign video with. That lens should be a proxy for a person that you want to engage in the vision, the fun, the journey of making this film happen. So that's the kind of conversation you should have. Hey, man, you know, you don't have to say, hey, man, but, you know, I'm speaking for myself. It would be, you know, I grew up watching baseball movies and it really made me who I am today. And I remember the feeling I had when I first saw one, and I want to bring that feeling to children today because X, Y, and Z. Maybe it's a baseball movie. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's, you know, something specific to your passion about, you know, insert your passion here. But unless you can connect on an emotional level with me, I am going to revert to looking at your film in that binary way, and there's just too much competition in my brain for participating with a film that's already complete, finished, and in the theater for you to win. So that's one thing. And the other thing is you should include things like cutting to clips of past work, maybe, you know, prove that you can do what you're saying you're going to do. If you have footage in the can, maybe you can do a series of shots, a.k.a. montage, whatever you want to call it, you know, of things that people can expect to see in this film. But it's a different deliverable than a trailer, because I would not necessarily – some people bookend where they'll do, hi, I'm Adam, and here are the reasons why this matters to me. Now let's look at the trailer. And then they show the trailer, and then they come back and say, hi, I'm Adam. I hope you liked it, and I hope you give me money. That can work. But my opinion is that it's more powerful if you say, here's some things that you're going to see in this film. We've already started, and just it's a different. Don't tell the whole story of the movie. Just give some sample moments, you know, like a couple of seconds if you have them, that show the flavor of the film, and then back to you, because it's not. It really shouldn't be a trailer.
It's all about you.
I mean, it's all about you in terms of your vision, your ability to deliver, because that is important. People might like you and say, well, but, you know, a movie seems like it'll cost millions of dollars and take months and months, and you have to really be an expert to make it. So you want to give some sense of your bona fides, and if you have, you know, past work, you can do a quick whip through some of those. A great thing in the pitch that isn't the video but is in the text is to have an infographic of the breakdown of your budget or of the money that you're asking for. You know, this amount is going to go to craft services. That amount's going to go to transportation. This amount's going to go to post. That amount, you know, literally everything, so that I know, you know, you're asking for $140,000 or whatever you're asking for. You ask for $20,000. I see exactly that you know what you're going to use it for and that you've communicated how that's going to get you to the next level or how that's going to get you complete, whichever you're asking for.
Okay. Yeah, that's very important. How are you spending my money? Well done.
Right. Yes.
Well, okay. So, and 3.5 minutes is what you find is the best length?
Well, you know, it's tricky. What I can say is from statistics, the most campaigns that reach their goal have pitch videos between 2 and 3 minutes. That's a little bit of a misleading, you know, site-wide stat. Personally, I don't think there's anything wrong. Anything between 2 and 4 minutes seems to be fine. But we've seen campaigns that, you know, have 5-minute pitches succeed also. I think that 3 is a good place to shoot for.
Okay, that's a good idea. All right, well, let's go to goal setting.
Hmm.
I just want to make sure everybody understands what you said earlier,
sure.
So we've got to get clear that the amount of your budget has no relationship to what you want to ask for. That is totally reliant on the number of people in your database, right?
Well, right. Yes. So, yeah, just because your movie needs $11 million doesn't mean, therefore, you should turn and say, well, therefore, I can raise $11 million. That has nothing to do with each other. Right. In fact, I wouldn't even consider the amount of my budget as one of the factors in how I choose the amount I can raise in crowdfunding. Rather, I would go and first of all, let me just say as a huge caveat, nobody can predict the number you will be able to raise. Like, literally, can you raise $10,000? I don't know. Do you have 5 million? You can tell me everything you know about your community, meaning how many Facebook fans, how many Twitter followers, what the size of your newsletter list is. And I cannot authoritatively tell you what that will translate to. However, there is sort of a swath of reason, you know, using reasonableness, I can tell you what would be reasonable to expect. So you can reverse engineer your goal if you please take into account the caveat that I cannot predict the number you'll be able to reach. But one way you can consider getting a sense of what's reasonable is understanding the thing I said earlier, that you need to be accountable for 20 to 30% of whatever number it is that you choose to be your goal. So if you can't hit that 20 to 30% with people that you personally speak to or are confident, are passionate enough about you that they will give in that first day, then there's a very strong likelihood you're not going to get past 20% of your goal. You need to be accountable for that 20% minimum, right? So if you know
right.
that, you can say, well, gee, let's see. I know 4 people. I have no Twitter. I have no Facebook. I don't understand computers, you know, and I just started this movie and I've been living, you know, in a straw hut in Bali for the last 13 years. Well, the 4 people will give you $1,000 a piece that you know, and you have some way to get out into the world with people who love your movie, but it's not through your, you know, your connections, you can say, well, let's see, $4,000, what is that 20% of? That's 20% of $20,000. So conceivably, this is conceivably, you could hit $20,000 relying on that heuristic, that word, you know, that rule of thumb, that if you can account for 20 to 30%, the strangers will come. Now, the second part being strangers will come only if you're able to do the work in those first couple months, you know, running up. And in that example, if you were in Bali, you had better get on the horn to all of the biggest influencers in your niche. Like if you're doing a horror movie and you don't have a meaningful, long-standing following on Twitter or in a newsletter where you talk about horror movies and people love you and you know them and they know you, then what you had better do in those 2 months running up to your campaign is be in touch with the most credible influencers in horror who do know you now and have personally said they are going to engage with you in your campaign to go out to their followers and do it in that timed way on that day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, like we talked about before. Then you have a fighting chance. If you don't do that, even your $4,000 won't amount to anything more than $4,000.
Right. It's up to you. You really have to do the marketing. And I say that it's very similar to a film. Good pre-production lends to a good production, and the production starts when you go live. But the pre-production is the key to a good crowdfunding.
Absolutely. Preparation is so important.
Right. And gratitude. I always recommend that they be that they show their gratitude for the money they have received, because gratitude begets more kindness. I don't know how, but it seems to work that people, when you just keep thanking people for what they've given you, other people join in, and that always seems to work.
Yeah,
well, let's go to perks. How would you recommend people consider which perks to give or what type of them?
Well, film has an advantage over a lot of the other categories on Indiegogo because it's one of the few categories that people all over the world dream of being a part of. So there are some very standard ones that have developed over time in terms of film perks that you should absolutely offer. One, well, of course, assuming that what you're raising money for is to complete a film, and I'm just going to use that assumption, then, you know, one of the perks has to be get a copy of the film, whether it's download or, you know, and then you can incrementally increase the contribution level to get an incrementally better version or have more content. For example, you know, a standard def, a high def, it could be with a director's cut, you know, just like the DVDs have always done, where there's the enhanced version that has all of the additional material. You can upgrade the amount of material you provide in exchange for higher contribution. So that can be outtakes, that can be deleted scenes, director's commentary, actor's commentary, you know, backstage video, just a behind-the-scenes video. And then things like I mentioned before, where you might actually give away notable props, depending on the film. Obviously, some won't be part of the appeal, but depending on the film, there may be central props that would be fun to have, or wardrobe, also, same thing. And then into experiences, and this relates to what I was saying before about how people dream of being a part of the film industry. You can actually you can give participation in the creative process of film as one of your perks. So depending on where and what you're doing, you know, people can come visit the set. They can come work on the set. They can also become involved in the creative decision-making about the film, whether it's, like I think I rattled off before, you might offer naming rights of characters or set, you know, settings. Like if the plot happens at a high school, it might be named after your grandmother if you give me $200. or a cool thing that I saw one film do a while back was I was thinking of the high school, and there was it was a high school sports film. So several scenes happened in the gym, and it made no difference to the writers, you know, it made no difference to the artistic decision making to do this, but they said in the gym on the wall is going to be all of the all American, you know, like banners up on the wall of all of the all American football players from that school.
Yes.
And they said, if you give X amount of dollars, you or your kid or your friends can be those, your names can be on the wall in the back of that scene. Other people did something where they had several scenes in an executive's office, and you could give some money and have your family photo be his family in the picture, you know, just sitting on his desk.
Right, right.
Things like that. So those are fun ways that you can engage people. And, of course, if you think it through, if it gets to that point where you're actually into distribution, God willing, you know, when that film comes out, wherever it comes out, if my family is on the desk in the office scene, obviously I'm going to tell everybody, you got to check out this movie and look at the scene at minute 12 minutes, 18 seconds when he's having the conversation. Check out his family, you know, because you'll be, oh, my gosh, that's you and your kids.
Right.
It's a fun way to not only get people to have fun engaging with the film, but it actually, it takes an eye forward to the additional big benefit of crowdfunding in general, which is that your funders become your word-of-mouth marketing team and have paid you for the right to do it.
Oh, that's terrific. And that's what you want. Well, let's go back to work on the set. You, for example, how would you do that?
Well, this is always crazy. When I talk about this, you know, to other groups, they just kind of blink. But when I talk about this to filmmakers, there's always a laugh. But there was a film, this was a long time ago now, a couple years ago, but there was a film that gave away one of the perks, and it was like $100. It wasn't very much. You could work the boom on set for a day. And when I say that in a group of filmmakers, at least a few people chuckle, because the truth was, this very film, the guy literally, and I mean literally, asked his own friends to do the boom for the day, and they're like, oh, I just hate doing it. I'm not going to do that. And he's like, I'll pay you. And they're like, no, I don't want to do that. I'll do something else. You know, because the boom, you're holding your arms up over your head, you know, that
right.
Long stick with the mic, it's just exhausting, and it, like, drips down into the set, and everybody gets mad at you because you're in frame, and you know, you're crouched behind a couch for an hour, you know, whatever. Everybody hates doing it. But this guy paid $100 and flew to L.A. and worked the boom all day and hung out with the cast and did all this. And loved it. He told
yes.
everybody. He was part of the movie. He's in the movie, literally. He would tell his friends, you know, according to the director, he would tell his friends, you know, you see this scene? That's me behind the couch. <You know? laughs> So there's not a lot of other businesses where you can, like, pay me and come make copies for me. You know, like, a lot of that you can't, there's not a lot of correlatable experiences in other businesses where being part of the day-to-day work that no one wants to do actually is glamorous to a lot of people.
Of course it would be. I tell filmmakers that charge $200 a day and let them be a PA for you, because that personal assistant can do things. They'll know what to do. You can have them helping you, and they will love it. And a craft service person. Who wouldn't want to have fix the coffee and talk to the whole crew? That's a fun place, too.
Sure. I mean, you know, as long as you are creative about, well, I mean, on the one hand, creative about explaining what it is that they're doing, and then respectful, obviously, of them when they show up, and make sure they're not treated, you know, that they're treated like they're a guest and that they're doing something fun as opposed to, you know, a slave. But yes, it's very funny how people love to be involved in ways that in any other part of life they wouldn't.
Exactly. But when you're making a movie, it's so exciting.
It is.
Well, all right, let's go to perks. What suggestions do you have?
Well, those are, we were talking a lot about those, you know, in terms of everything from, like I was saying, the giving away the film through the enhanced versions all the way through experiences. All of those are good examples, I think, of perks. You know, another thing I'd say about perks, though, is what we see is that releasing a new perk, you know, offering a new perk during the course of the campaign often is a great way to re-energize the community around participating. So you may launch with, say, 10 perks, and then maybe a week in, part of your update is, new perk added, you now can come to the set, or new perk added, you know, the director is going to be giving a Skype conference call showing our new storyboard, or I don't know, something like that. And people might engage with a perk that's released during the campaign. And in fact, we see that perks released during the campaign tend to disproportionately outperform perks that are available at launch. So it's a good tactic.
And scarcity, you mentioned that to me one other time. So you want to say there's only so many available? Does that help?
Yeah, that's a great tactic also. I mean, there's two ways you can do that. One is you can make it time-bound, and another way is you can make it numerically bound. So you can say, get a autographed photo of the star, and you can say 10 available. And so people are like, oh boy, so they missed out. Then you can also do things where, only today get an autographed photo of the star, and this will expire tomorrow. And then another thing you can do that sometimes people do is they'll create sort of a step deal, in a sense, where they'll give an experience or something that has a limit, but it'll only be regulated or modified according to price or by price, where you might say the crew jacket for this production is going to be, you know, $300. But the first five people who contribute and want that as a reward will get it for 100. The second 10 will get it for 150. The third 20 will get it for 250. And then it'll just be available for regular at 300.
That's terrific. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about Shemar Moore's campaign, because I know that he really was successful, and he had a lot of interaction with his audience on what to give.
Yeah, Shemar Moore. He did some amazing stuff. So Shemar is a TV star. So he had... he's on a show called Criminal Minds, and he is a super handsome dude, and so he's got a lot of fans of his work, and he's got a lot of fans of his workouts. But he had a film called The Bounce Back, which is a romantic comedy that he produced and directed, I believe. And they did some amazing stuff in terms of engagement, where, first of all, he personally was extremely engaged and connected on Facebook and Twitter, and not just as an actor, you know, just sort of as a person, you know, and had been for a while. So he really enjoyed engagement with sort of the public, who then became his fans. And what they did, and I'm not positive whether they did this proactively or that the fans kind of ended up doing this, but I think they fostered the creation of something that was called Baby Girl Nation, which was it was like 20 women who love Shemar, and they kind of became his elite guard, sort of promotion. And they all volunteer. They just love doing it. And so they would do things like, let's all give $9 for the ninth anniversary of the series, or it's the fifth of the month, let's give $5, you know, or just figuring out reasons for everybody to get together and do something that had some sort of time-bound or relevance in the world. But he also did a bunch, and so they would help with everything, literally everything. And that obviously is enormously useful. He sent 67 updates. So
oh my gosh.
That was, I think his campaign was 60 days. So more than every day, he personally was updating. And he also, that's just through Indiegogo. He also did some great stuff where they were fulfilling a lot of their perks during the campaign. So if you could, one of the things about Indiegogo is that if you contribute, we disburse the funds to you like every 10 days, I think it is. It's like 3 or 5 days after every Friday. So you will actually start having money to do things with well before your campaign is over, often, depending on the ways that people contribute. So one of the things that happened was they started sending out their T-shirts that people were, you know, contributing to receive. And then he had the fans send in, the contributors, send in pictures of themselves wearing them. And he would post them on his Instagram and on his Facebook. So, and say something about, you know, the person. Like, so great, thank you, or, you know, love you, or whatever it was. And that would just jack up the enthusiasm for other people to send in pictures of themselves. And, of course, when they're doing that on Facebook, they're sharing it on their own Facebook page that they just got this T-shirt for this film they care enough about that they're posting a picture of themselves, which is about the best recommendation you could ask for.
Brilliant.
So they had, I think they had 15% of all their funders, and they had thousands of funders, were repeat contributors. And that was, you know, and a lot of people gave more than twice. So let's see. Another thing that they did that was really cool was they did, I think, 4 live chats with Shamar to try and give face-to-face interaction for as many people as they could with him during the campaign. And they did that on a site called Spreecast. Which I've never used, but I just thought I'd mention it in case people want to check that out. They had a big campaigner team, and everybody would update personally with their names and the pictures and stuff, and the fans really got to know all of the campaigner team. They did Twitter parties, and the Baby Girl Nation would help them host it. So where, you know, they'd pick a hashtag, and everybody would be talking around a certain hashtag, including Shamar Moore. And maybe one of the coolest things that I thought that they did was they did a party, a physical event where you could come, and one of the goals of the party was to bring your idea and what you would pay for a perk that they hadn't thought of or listed.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yeah, so they went to the meetup. I don't remember where they did it, if it was a bar or a somebody's house. I really don't remember. But the point was, in person, physically, you know, lots of people showed up, and people came and said, you know, I would give $200 for Shamar to, you know, have a phone conversation with me, or I would give $1,000 to visit the set of Criminal Minds, or some people asked for autographed pictures of other actors from Criminal Minds that weren't Shamar, but that he obviously knew. And so he was totally game, and he basically did almost everything people asked. But the condition was you had to contribute to the campaign during that drive, during that party. And so what that did was it created, and they had this hashtag, I think it was the bounce back was their hashtag, and people would start voting, because they announced that they were doing this in-person party, but obviously not everybody's in Los Angeles. So they said they were going to do hashtag the bounce back, and they were going to post all of these people's ideas, and everybody could vote whether they wanted to make it sort of a official perk. So in engaging everybody to do that, the bounce back hashtag trended worldwide. They actually trended on Twitter just from doing that, which, of course, attracted, you know, probably tens of thousands of new followers to the Twitter, and
Who knows how much that actually translated to in the fundraising. But bear in mind, all of this, just in case anyone's saying, well, he's a star, I had never heard of him, most people have never heard of him, and we've had much bigger stars fail on Indiegogo, much bigger, and on all the crowdfunding sites. This is a guy who's, you know, one of six main characters on a TV show that is in the kind of the middle of the road. So nothing against Shamar. He's awesome. He's a talented actor, and he's great-looking and all that stuff. But the reason this worked was because of the creativity and the work that was put in by the team. And it's something that can be replicated if you've got a real creative, hardworking team. And I would say you do need a core fan base of some size just so that you can have the kind of, like, the Baby Girl Nation kind of help, you know. But that's not incredibly hard to generate if you're really working hard for a couple of months, few months following, you know, up in the run-up to your campaign. These kinds of things are possible.
Absolutely. One of the favorite quotes I have of you is, the degree to which you're creating your list is the degree to which you will be successful. So let's talk a minute about the list, because obviously he started with some list, but then he what we have learned from you is how he expanded on that list. But where do people go to get their list started? Any ideas on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I often, it's one of my little, like, stump things that I say all the time, is that what you're alluding to, you know, I'll often kind of joking riff on the Schindler's List thing. I'll say, list is life. Your list is your life. And if you're not doing something today, literally when we get off this call, if you don't go do something to get somebody to subscribe to you in some way or another, like your newsletter or your Twitter following or your Facebook or your Instagram, I don't care what it is, something where you have access to someone who cares in some way about you, you are not serving your career today. It's almost a fail. Because at some point, you're going to, in this new, the new way of doing things is that you're going to ask people to do something. Maybe it's crowdfunding, maybe it's something else. But you're going to have what I call your number. And your number is the conversion rate of people doing what you ask. And that means, you know, your number might be 6 or it might be 1. And that means 1% of people that you ask will do what you say, will do what you ask. So you, unfortunately, don't know your number until you ask. So if you know that you don't know your number, and let's say it's 1%, and you're kind of, you know, not paying attention too much to building your list, and, you know, when it comes time to ask people, you've got 100 people on your list. Well, if your number is 1, one person is going to do what you ask. 1% of 100 is going to do what you ask. And if it's please fund my crowdfunding campaign, you are going to end your campaign with one person. However, if you've been taking this seriously, and by the time you come to your crowdfunding campaign, you have 100,000 people on your lists put together, when you make that, it's the same effort, you know, when you make the ask, hey, can you fund my crowdfunding campaign, and here's how, all the things that are available. Well, it's not one, it's 1,000 people. And the 1,000 people, now you're into statistics. Right, the 1,000 on Indiegogo, the average contribution is $74. So, if statistically speaking, if your number is 1, you have 100,000 people on your list, it's not crazy to expect that you might raise $74,000 on Indiegogo. That obviously is a generalization, but the point is, when the day comes, those who have been working on their list will have riches, and those who haven't will have work and disappointment. So to your question, how do you build it? It's, you build it by first having things that people would like to subscribe to. So that could be just having a Twitter account where you are regularly posting things that are either enjoyable to see, read, interesting, informative, whatever it is, but you have to be posting. And then it could be a Facebook page where you similarly are posting whatever, pictures or updates or whatever it is. You have to have something to which people will subscribe. It could be a blog, it could be a newsletter, it could be, you know, whatever it is, but you have to take it seriously as the engine of your career. Because in the best case, crowdfunding can entirely supplant distribution for not just film, but music, books, everything, where you are going to disintermediate the people who used to be taking your money and your, you know, and that you had to rely on to get your work out into the world. Soon, crowdfunding is not only going to be a way to raise that money, but to actually distribute that work. So if you're doing your work now, 18 months from now, you will be entirely in control, not only of funding your work, but of distributing it. And then the degree to which you'll be successful is the degree to which you're building a list.
Well said, Adam. Thank you. Well, in closing, have you any more advice that you'd like to give us on crowdfunding?
The only advice is fail. That's what I would say. I mean, I think if there's one thing that stops all of us more than anything, it's the paralysis of analysis. And I think analysis is very important, and you should do it. But understand that life is long, and nobody. The beautiful thing about crowdfunding is that when failure happens, it's because no one saw it, right? So the one that's sometimes reassuring, because people are like, oh God, what if I do it wrong and it looks bad and I am embarrassed because I needed 50,000 and I only raised 1,000. Well, the two pieces of good news about that are, one, either you did it right and nobody liked your idea, and congratulations, you just saved yourself 2 years of your life from working on an idea that nobody would have connected with anyway. So, you know, market validation, market testing is hugely useful. But the second thing is, maybe you did it wrong. But if you did it wrong, you'll know, because you'll know your statistics and you'll know nobody came. And the good news is nobody saw it when you failed, because guess what? Nobody came. So the best way to learn is do it and fail. And that those who failed today are the experts of tomorrow. That's all I'll say about that. So I really encourage people to do that. Don't be scared.
Oh, great. And I do too. And just one more thing I wanted you to discuss quickly is that I recommend sometimes that filmmakers take their needs and divide it into three. Go after the first amount of money on a crowdfunding campaign for 50, 60 days. And once they complete that, keep adding to their database and go back for a second and a third. That three times seems to be a good number for crowdfunding for filmmakers. What do you think?
That's one of those delightfully counterintuitive things about crowdfunding, where some people would say, well, you can't go back to the well. I already asked them for money. But interestingly, serial campaigns like you're describing, like a pre-production, a production, and a co-production, or a pre-production and production, and then a post-production and distribution, or whatever it is, those we've seen not only work, but interestingly, subsequent campaigns often do better than the first one. And, you know, while your first instinct might be, oh, you can't go back to the same people and ask them for money again, in fact, if you remember that crowdfunding isn't really asking for money at all, it's engaging people, giving them a way to participate in something that they really love to be a part of, like when we were talking about the glamour of movies or connecting with you and your mission. Once you're done with the first one and you've actually delivered and you've done what you promised, they are usually your funders from the first one are usually the first people to fund your second one. In fact, whereas in your first one you had to scrape to get that group of 20, and your second one you might have people lining up, dozens, dozens, and dozens, or hundreds of people lining up to give you money before you hit your 20%. So it actually makes it easier, not harder.
That's great, because this is what I've seen. One of my filmmakers has she's into her third campaign now, and each one has been more money than the prior one. She's using the same database, but she is continuing to add names. But they are coming back because they really support her in the film.
I love it. I believe it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. What a great amount of knowledge and information you carry.
Well, hopefully now you do too.
Gonna have to go back and listen to the on-demand episode over and over, because there's so much information to pull from this and lots of notes to take.
Good.
Right.
Well, any other? We have. If you Google Indiegogo field guide for campaigners, there's a lot more there. On our blog, there's a section called Insights that has a lot of really good best practices. And then, of course, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, I'm adam@indiegogo.com, so feel free.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you so much, Adam. Good luck
to you.
Sure.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.